Blog Talk Radio.
From the triumphant stadium of U.S. Women's World Cup to the fury of Donald Trump's illegal comments and broadcasting from a shiny antenna-studded brand new single white trailer, Kelly O'Connell here. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in on the sixth day of July, 2 days after July the 4th. How was your 4th of July? Mine was pretty uneventful. Well, the women's team in World Cup soccer, the U.S. team won, and let's get right to those exciting comments on that. And you got to kind of wonder, you know, they just kicked the stuffing out of Japan, if they could have beat anybody on that day. All right, so for future girls, I guess that was important, but anyway, devastating and dominating performance. All right, so I've got your weather for you here. 70 degrees right now, 76 in El Paso. Weather right now is 71 here. And we're going to have a high today of 96, a low of 70, and about a 20% chance of rain. I really thought it was going to rain more over the weekend. It didn't seem to cooperate, though. There were a lot of dark clouds that had passed over, and I heard some thunder and such, but it was just not meant to be. So, anyway... have to take it when we can get it. I think there was it on Friday? There was a pretty good storm. So anyway, I've got another little weather clip here for you. Severe weather, the possibility. We've got the possibility of rain all across New Mexico currently. But, like I say, not much of a chance, maybe 20%. And so there is some strong weather that's going to be out in the center of the country, kind of from Amarillo all the way up to Illinois. And I've got a little clip of that for you right here. But there has been a trail of storms that have gone across the center of the United States for weeks and weeks, really months, almost every day. And it's kind of been fascinating to watch. So that looks like it'll continue at least for the near future. The heat wave in the Pacific Northwest is starting to abate a little bit, but here's your severe storms, flash floods in the plain area and south. So we've got a potential for thunderstorms from one side of the country to the other in the center, but there is a strong line of thunderstorms going from Amarillo side a little bit sideways up to Illinois. And so I just want to let you know there is Doug, my friend Doug, that everybody seemed to enjoy his guesting on the show. when we had talked the impact of gay marriage and all this other stuff, my friend who's the philosophy professor from Colorado is supposed to be coming on at 7 today, although I got him a word back a little bit late last night. But good guy. Very, very interesting guy. And it is 6:13, and some of the other headlines is we have Greece that has decided to default or voted to not accept the offer from the rest of Europe. And people are saying that, you know, what can you say? It's a terrible time in Greece. It's a terrible time in Greece, and nobody knows what's going to happen, but we've got potential outcomes that don't look too good. It's really, I don't know. It's just, I guess it was totally avoidable, you know? And totally avoidable, and it didn't have to be that way, but that's just the way the Greeks did it. Now they say that these Greeks are going to be living under the thumb of the Turks. And that nobody wants that. But anyway, we'll take a little break here. And at 6:14, and we're going to come back and I'm going to give you a little more information on Greece. It's Kelly here. If you were listening to the show on July the 4th, I was just looking at my texts, 805-6180, from that day, and somebody said, you're really on edge today. And so what happened was this guy named Robert called up, and he talked like this. And Robert wanted to remind us in the midst of our pre-celebration for July the 4th that we should never forget about slavery. And that before I got all proud of myself or my country, to take stock of the fact that we had slavery and we've got a history of racism. And then he kind of added in, you know, anti-black, anti-Mexican, anti-Asian, this whole thing. And I'm listening to this. And, you know, for some reason, my blood starts to boil because I'm saying, yeah, okay, and, you know, ask him how he thought the slavery had affected the country and everything, and, you know, he says, well, we wouldn't have had a civil war, and I'm like, duh. But anyway, it's like, you know, if there's no water, you don't have a boat. But in any event, the more I listened to the guy, the more my blood started to boil because he wouldn't, you know, he just kept talking and kind of like, you know, one of these guys didn't want to be interrupted, and the most important thing in the history of America was slavery and racism and all this stuff. And, you know, I mean, slavery has not been legal for 150 years. I don't mean to shock anybody, but we did have a war that killed 650,000 people over slavery. So I mean, people who act like there was racism in the country and we never did anything about it are, you know, really kind of out to lunch. But the idea that the only thing that we need to remember, the main and only thing we need to remember is racism and slavery, just really, it hit me the wrong way. And so I started, in my mind, I was calling this guy the Undertaker because he was talking like this, and we will never escape from racism, and you people on the right need to remember that. It was like he was there to inject the embalming fluid into America. So that really boiled my blood. So that's I was kind of on edge before Steve got here. I really was started to feel adamant that I wanted to argue with this guy, the Undertaker, Robert the Undertaker. So, all right. So I've got this very weird thing, and I want to know if anybody knows anything about it. Texas UFO Cube, multiple view witnesses and photos. It's kind of an unbelievable thing. It looks like a giant black box. Or it is a giant black box, although I wouldn't have any idea how big it was, that supposedly came out of the clouds above El Paso on the 29th of June 2015. So just a few days ago, like about a week ago. And I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anybody talking about it in the media, but I found it on I went to one of these, sometimes I go on these kind of side, like I think I went to like the American Patriot website to see if they had any stories for the 4th. And anyway, so what it is this black thing up in the clouds that supposedly came down and was floating kind of over El Paso, which when I first saw it, I kind of assumed it was like a balloon or something, because almost every UFO story that I've ever heard of tends to have at some point a explanation that is that's not, you know, these are people from another planet. Although there are true believers out there, a lot of people strongly believe in UFOs. But in any event, where I'm looking at right now is IN5D, IN5D.com. Put that in and just put in Texas Cube, Texas UFO Cube. So 523-1450 if you saw that, 805-618, or if you heard about it. I'm sure chances are most people didn't. And I'm feeling like it must be a hoax, but I'm not. I really haven't heard anything about it. All right, so here's a little bit on Greece. Greece refused to accept the offer from basically Germany, and they're fighting back. And it's not helpful that their leader is their prime minister is it's like a Marxist. I'm not even kidding. Wow, talk about bad luck. Here we go. Here's a little bit on Greece. Well, actually, there was a clip here from Jim Rogers that I'll have to bring up here in a second. But here's the main story. This is actually also from the 29th, but this is this one is after the vote. It's from July 5th. So here we go. This is, believe it or not, from Al Jazeera. It is so sad to me that Al Jazeera, which is basically a Muslim news site, is better at reporting the news than the vast majority of American news, so-called news entities. And 70% of the people feel like, by the way, they did a poll, 70% of the people feel like that the news is purposefully slanted. Well, what happened to this other 30% that they didn't realize what's going on? Anyway, here we go, Greece. All right, so they say that Greece has too much debt to ever pay back, kind of like America. We've gotten to the point here where we can't really pay our debt back. So the couple of options, neither option here is very appetizing, to wipe it off the books, which means we don't pay our creditors, which is a terrible thing. We can't really do that. Or to monetize it. Monetizing it means, believe it or not, creating inflation as we're doing right now, to inflate our way out of it. The problem with that approach is it takes money out of everybody's pocket, because your dollar, let's just say your dollar weighed a pound, or not to confuse currencies, but let's just say your dollar weighed 10 ounces, 16 ounces, whatever. Within a couple of years, let's say it weighed half as much. If it was gold, then that would make sense. But because it's paper, it's a little bit harder to follow. Anyway, Greece is at the point where they need to either, their debt out and keep them on board, or kick them out. If they kick them out, they can go back to the drachma, But either way, it's a bad situation. And I think that you have to blame a lot of this on the European, the other countries, because they're the ones who are loaning them money. And we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, Kelly, would you say Greece is too big to fail?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, how big is it? You know, they couldn't make $1 billion debt payment. I don't know how big they are, but no, I wouldn't say they're too big to fail. The question is, does Greece want to, or does the European Union want to deal with the issue? Because it brings up a couple of really unpleasant and probably unacceptable ideas. Number one, that the European Union is a fiction. That would be like the United States kicking a country out, number one. And number two, I mean, it would seem to me not to be a very high, if they covered their debt payments for a while, not a very high price to give the world the illusion that everything is okay. Mike, did you hear about this thing over El Paso, this UFO, this black box?
You know, I checked two websites when you said that. One was called Caravan to Midnight, which is at John B. Wells. He's in Dallas. And nothing on his website, and there's nothing on both Top Secret. And then Dabu, I checked, and nothing. And usually he's on top of that UFO stuff.
Well, I mean, you know, anybody who listens knows that I'm not a real UFO nut, but I just find it interesting that it just supposedly happened. It was right over El Paso, and the pictures of the thing are spectacular, and they've got a interview with some girl that supposedly took the pictures. I mean, there's a picture of it that it's so clear, it's astounding, but I have to assume that it's a hoax, you know? But anyway, just because generally speaking, this stuff is a hoax, but although there are, I'm sure, people that are UFO aficionados, that would disagree. How do you feel about UFOs?
Well, I think they exist. I mean, if you read the Bible in Ezekiel,
chariots of fire.
Yeah, well, God had his throne on Ezekiel saw God's throne on a UFO. He said it was amber, and there was many windows. And he said it had wheels, and he landing gear.
Uh-huh.
He describes it in Ezekiel. So if you believe the Bible, I mean,
you know what I find interesting, Mike? You present the Bible as if there's only one interpretation, and if anybody would disagree with your interpretation, that they don't accept the Bible. I found that interesting.
Everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
Right? But you do present your ideas as basically a bulletproof presentation of theology. But anyway, Mike, I got to go. Thanks for the call.
Have
a good day.
Kelly.
All right, folks. Let's take a little break here. It is 6:34. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. All right, I've got a little clip from Jim Rogers, who was the partner of a number of years ago, a couple of decades ago. He was the partner of George Soros. And for whatever reason, he and George broke up the team. But he's got an analysis of what's going to happen in Greece. I'm going to play that clip from the UFO in just a minute, but I want to get this out first. All right, so that's pretty straightforward. Jim Rogers is a heck of a economics guy. He's made over $1 billion. He's no George Soros, though, who is... George Soros is like a vulture feeding off of collapsing currencies, you know. All right, so here is just a little bit on this UFO, which is kind of remarkable. I looked up UFO Cube, and it is all over the internet. So check out this little description here. Probably a hoax, but check it out. Well, anyway, was it a balloon, a square balloon, I don't know, that was kind of descending through the clouds? I think it's better to to, I'm just looking at all the different pictures here. It is better to use the most likely scenario on these things. I think there's an interview of somebody who saw the UFO, supposedly. Overwhelmingly positive. I mean, what are they, pro-UFO, pro-alien? Anyway, let's take a little break here. I'll see if I can find some of that interview for you. It's 6:44. This is AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180. If you're the undertaker who's ready to embalm America that called me on July the 3rd, Robert, call back in. I'd really like to have a continue our discussion on that. 6:44, and today's high is 96, low is 70. It's about 71 right now. We will be right back.
Making sure we're on.
Yeah, okay, I'll call you back. Thanks, brother. Okay, so big fat UFO over El Paso. It, what does it look like? Because you can't see it. What does it look like? I'm looking at the clearest picture. The clearest picture, if you saw it, you would say that's Photoshopped or whatever. It just looks like, it is a giant black brick. And when I heard the interview from the person who saw it, it just sounded like, I don't know. It didn't sound real, but then again, tend to be a little skeptical about these things. Generally speaking, all of these UFOs are either they seem to stories disappear or they're explained away. So, all right, let me cover some headlines for you. I just talked to Doug Groteis, by the way, and he's going to be coming on. Although, you know, speaking of UFOs, NASA accused of cutting live feed as UFOs fly past Earth, mystery object lights up sky in Atlanta. Well, maybe I'll play a little bit on the UFO cutting the live feed. I thought that was pretty funny. All right, so some of your headlines today: Greece has defaulted, or is seems to be in the midst of defaulting. And they don't know what's going to happen. The leader, the prime minister of Greece is a Marxist, basically a Marxist, a student Marxist who got into elected office. And if you listen, if you know anything about Marxist rhetoric, one of the things they hate the most is banks. So these guys are now standing up to the bank. Now, maybe it's exactly what they need. But on the other hand, I mean, it's, you know, they need the goodwill of the people that they owe money to. And I don't know if this is the best way to do it. We'll see, though. It could be one of those situations where someone does something that's so outrageous that it kind of shocks their opponent into taking them more seriously. So if Greece leaves the EU, I don't see what the long-term big deal is, but it could be the beginning of the end of the EU, if you see what I mean. Al Jazeera. July 4th video mocks Americans as fat, gun-toting, pill-popping, porn-watching racists. Number one target for the Democratic National Committee is Rand Paul. I guess they're scared of him. All right, so there's something that came up that I wanted to play a clip of. I've got a couple more ads to run here, and I'm going to have to do that first. Forget the UFO. I'm going to come back and play a clip from Donald Trump, and there's some outrage going over him right now. Basically, what Donald Trump said was that Mexico is sending us criminals. There's outrage out there. Of course, it's political correct. And when I was listening to this, it's like, the guy can't tell the truth. A person, you know, Donald Trump might be the biggest idiot in history, but we've gotten to the point in our own history when people cannot tell the truth anymore and be taken seriously. And I've got a phone call. This is Kelly. You've called the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Kelly, I figured out what it was.
Hold on. Put you on hold. I got to take a break, Mike, so we'll be back. All right, folks. Got Mike on hold. And anyway, you can't tell the truth anymore. Therefore, it's a terrible time to be alive. You can't give your opinion without getting attacked by other people. How are we going to make it as the world's greatest country if we have to, you know, walk on eggshells and apologize for every single comment made that's out of line, that's supposedly out of line? We'll be right back at 7:52. Kelly here at 6:54. I've got Doug Grotius coming on in a few minutes. I guess Mike didn't want to be put on hold. Here's Mike again. Is this Mike?
Kelly, what I was going to say before.
Briefly, yes.
Before you so rudely cut me off.
Mike, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting it's your show, and I'm just here as a worker, but go ahead.
I was going to say, you should do a show on the Saturn agenda. You know, the Black Cube with the Freemasons?
Dude, I have no idea what you're talking about, but you're burning up valuable time. What is the Saturn agenda?
Oh, okay, go on YouTube. There's a good video. It's called William Cooper, the Saturn Agenda.
Your buddy William Cooper that died in a gunfight with the Federales in Arizona?
That guy.
All right, I'll check it out. Anything else?
There's always something else, but
what's that?
Have a great day.
You too. All right, man. Got out of that one with nary a scratch. All right, here, the Donald Trump says, listen to this, the president has allowed 60 or 70,000 violent criminals as part of this illegal surge. But if you point out that one of these people does a criminal act, then you're a bad person. Check this out, Donald Trump. All right, so we've got tens of thousands going towards 100,000 illegals that are violent criminals. Hundreds of people have been murdered by them. They were let in. They knew they were violent. They knew their history. They let them stay. This administration has blood on its hands. and now they're getting outraged because somebody points it out. It's crazy. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, we're going to come back and talk to my buddy Doug Grotai, 659 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We'll be right back.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi there.
Hey, we're on in about 2 minutes.
Okay. Did you want to go with that theme of love and relationship to?
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds
sexual
me
revolution.
Of, yeah. Yeah. Yes, I would.
Okay. Good. Well, there's a lot to say, obviously. I just wrote a piece on this yesterday. It'll probably go up on my blog the next couple of days.
All right.
About especially about the biblical understanding of love and what it is and what isn't.
Sounds good, man. A little bit off the beaten track. It's a good topic.
I think so. Do anything interesting this weekend?
Slept.
That's needful.
Yeah, man, I was exhausted.
Sounds like you worked pretty hard.
A lot of hours, man. It's like, you know, kind of feel like I'm digging in a sand hill somewhere in a, you know, trying to dig a hole in sand.
Yeah.
I'm sure you feel that way sometimes too.
Yeah, I do.
What did you do?
Oh, not much. Did quite a bit of writing, working on an article on apologetics, the apologist repertoire, did some reading, got some things a little bit organized. Long way to go, but I'm working on it.
That's good.
Went for a long bike ride on Saturday. That was calming. I could use some calm now and then.
Good morning, Kelly here, of course, 706. The weather, about 71 degrees right now, 96 the high, 70 the low tonight, 20% chance of rain. And if you were listening during the week, you may have heard Douglas Grotai, who's my buddy, came on the show. He's one of the leading apologists in the United States, very well-published professor. And works at Denver Seminary. He's a professor of philosophy. And he and I were in Eugene together at the University of Oregon. He was getting his PhD there, and I was just a dumb kid, but we became friends. Anyway, Doug, good morning, and happy 6th of July. How you doing today?
All right. Very good. Good to talk with you again, Kelly.
Yeah, I got a lot of favorable feedback from the last show, so I thought, well, I called Doug up, and we decided we'd do something once a week, maybe an hour, would fit into his schedule. Doug is teaching, and he's sometimes preaching, and he's doing a lot of writing, so his time is very much already spoken for, but we're grateful to have him to be able to come on the show. Doug, you had something, when I asked if what you wanted to talk about this week, you had something off the beaten track, and what is your topic today?
I'd like to talk about the meaning of love and how it pertains to some of the issues we're facing concerning same-sex marriage and other types of sexual activity, part of the new sex revolution, I think, sexual revolution. And that word love is used constantly. We perhaps overuse it, saying we love this coffee and so on. But what we're hearing now is that love is love, meaning if two people love each other, then it is legitimate. It's healthy. And if a man loves another man, a woman loves another woman, then since love is love, they should have the opportunity to marry and be viewed as completely above board. And this is something just as wonderful as monogamy. And I think whenever a word as profound as love is used in settings that are not common in America or Western civilization, for that matter, that we should think a little bit more about what it means. Because when a word becomes extremely elastic, then it tends to lose its meaning in many cases. I also think back to Confucius. One of his reforms was called the rectification of words. It's a fascinating idea that vocabularies need to repent, in a sense that we need to define what we mean, where these words apply, where they do not apply.
All right, so I mean, the main reason that people are saying that we should allow gay marriage is some sort of a combination between liberty, American liberty, Western liberty, and love, right?
I think so. Is the idea that we should have the freedom, the opportunity to exercise love in a number of different settings. But what exactly do we mean by love? It can't just mean affection, because we can have unwarranted affection. We can have inappropriate affection. So if we think about love, we have to consider giving, giving what is fitting for another person, that it's other-oriented, and it can't be merely subjective. If it's proper love, let's put it that way, love can mean extreme affection, beyond liking something or being favorably disposed to something. But maybe we can work on that liberty part for a moment. We always need to have liberty within a framework of law. Otherwise, liberty becomes anarchistic. So if you appeal to the American ideal of liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration, then you have to say liberty to do what? And does one person's supposed liberty infringe on another person's liberty? And that seems to be the case now. It definitely is the case with respect to same-sex marriage, because lawsuits are breaking out everywhere, and they will continue to do so when people exercise their liberty not to provide a product or a service for a same-sex wedding. And what people don't understand is that if a baker or a florist respectfully denies service to a same-sex couple, they do not hate those people. In fact, there's no reason to hate them. It can be done, in fact, out of love, because love is not mere emotion and love is not mere acceptance. You need some framework. You need a groundwork for the whole idea of love.
Well, Doug, you know, these the Greeks had different words for love. It wasn't, you know, one of the problems in America, love, as you say, is stretched in so many directions, it doesn't really mean anything. But the Greeks had, they had a toolbox to describe love, right?
Right, and C.S. Lewis wrote a book on that called The Four Loves. The two that are discussed in Scripture are agape, which means unconditional love, God's love for us demonstrated in Christ, and then the love of friendship, or the love of people that make some kind of commitment to one another and care about each other, but it's not necessarily unconditional. And there were others, but I think the thing we want to focus on here is the proper love, the love that fits. And that, I think, is a challenging idea to people, because they reduce love to one thing, and that is affection, and then I think especially now we're considering erotic love, a sexual kind of love. And there, it's not the case that if you have erotic inclinations towards something, that thereby justifies it or makes it legitimate. And that's where people need to think things through, that human beings have to have their passions under control. That is, we need to reflect on the kind of urges that we find ourselves having. Someone simply acted out on all their urges, they would likely get arrested fairly quickly. So the issue, going back to the Greeks here, I think is what is conducive to human flourishing. And not everything is. Some things are virtuous, some things are vicious. So we need to put love in a larger category, I think, into a philosophy of life, in order to find the principles and standards that ought to govern us. And when we let affection, especially erotic affection, which is so powerful, if we let that loose, then you can see any number of things excused or even celebrated in the name of love, which are not truly loving at all.
Well, let me just throw this out there, Doug. There's this guy that I know you and I have both read his books and been influenced by, Jacques Ellul. Jacques Ellul, in his book, What I Believe, said, and Jacques Ellul was this very famous member of the French Resistance who went on to have a remarkable career as an author and as a leader in France, who died a number of years ago. But he said, in his chapter called Lifelong Love, love no longer exists in our society. And I think there's something to that. You don't even hear people talk about lifelong love in the arts anymore, which I find kind of remarkable.
Well, when you consider something like lifelong love, it makes no sense outside of a covenant. And I think people view married love often more as a contract where each party derives what they want and is free to dissolve the contract when they fail to receive what they want. In that case, a lifelong love between a man and a woman would be nearly impossible because there would be no covenantal situation. There would be no respecting and adhering to vows. And if you think of the traditional wedding vows, they're very strong and they're not conditional at all. It's till death do us part.
Yeah, till death do us part. And I'm thinking about, there's something about the modern age that really lacks zest, or it lacks, what do you want to call it, intimacy? There's so many of these relationships that people enter into that are transactional. What you're saying, I will enter into this relationship, I will get this thing from you, and you will give this other thing to me. And as long as that, experience is going on, we're friends or whatever. But when it's over, then I can walk away. You can walk away. For example, in many of the marriages that I encounter in my practice as a lawyer, at the end of the marriage, there's no sense of mourning. It's just like, let's get this puppy over so I can move on. And that was not the societal mindset, say, 50 years ago.
No, it wasn't, because then there was a stronger sense of being part of a larger human tradition, that you simply don't dissolve significant relationships whimsically. Or if they have to be ended, then there's a sense of loss and perhaps regret and even guilt. We're trying to live in a guilt-free society, a shame-free society, but guilt and shame have their place within a moral framework. So if you make lifelong vows to your spouse and then your spouse leaves you or you leave the spouse, something profoundly wrong and painful has happened. But Americans often have the mentality of, well, let's just get over it. One, get over it. Two, move on. And I think that shows a superficiality with respect to these larger, really sacred concerns. And it leads to unhappiness. A number of writers have written on the paradox of happiness, that Americans have more available to them with respect to goods, services, activities, and so on, entertainment, than any culture ever. You see an increase in depression. And consider the thriving business of the psychologist, the counselor.
There's something like 20% of the people are on psychiatric medication. But I think there's another thing, Doug, that happens is when people don't have any profound relationships that they've invested everything into, it gives the sense that you may not even be alive psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. Let's take a break right here, folks. And talking to Doug Grotius, a very profound topic, love. And we will be right back. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. I don't know. There was a phone problem a couple of days ago. I don't know if it's fixed yet. But 805-6180 is your text. We will be right back.
I kind of dropped the ball on the four loves, but I found my Lewis book, so we'll try to get – we can get back to that if you want to.
I always had a copy of Lifelong Love around, and I can't even find it on the internet anymore, but that chapter probably had more of an impact on my thinking than just about anything I've ever read in my life.
Hmm.
It was so stunning. It was just stunning.
Yeah. That's in What I Believe?
Yeah. It is. I mean, one of the most, I read it and I reread it. It was just so incredible.
Hmm.
There used to be a copy of it on Jesus Radicals, but I don't see it there anymore.
Hmm. Well, I've got most of my Elul books in one place I'm looking for right now.
The first couple of pages, maybe three or four pages, are amongst the most powerful things that I've ever read in my life. I mean, almost without comparison.
Well, I found the book. See, I read it, gosh, about 20 years ago. That's when we were hanging out.
Yeah.
So let me take a look at it. Well, I'll reread it, given what you said. It's been a long time.
My jaw dropped, and it's never really, you know, I thought about what he wrote there so many times.
Mm. Yeah, literature has that effect on us, doesn't it? You can read things that have more of an effect than some relationships and...
Many relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, another one that I have thought back too many times, believe it or not, is On the Road by Kerouac. The way that he wrote that in some of the profound things that he said in there were unbelievable. I remember one time I felt depressed and I like laid in bed one day just reading that book and felt better, you know, even though it's not a spiritual book per se, you know.
Well, it has to do with this idea of spiritedness, right? Passion,
yeah,
for life, draining as much meaning out of possible.
The search. Yeah, the search for meaning. He was actually ended up being a very conservative guy. He was a Catholic and ended
right.
up hating a lot of those beatniks.
Hmm.
He died of cirrhosis, but, I mean, he was a talented
yeah.
person.
I like some of his poetry,
here we go.
Too.
Well, it's Kelly here, and I've got Doug Grotius on the line, and talking about something that's a little bit hard to quantify, and it is love. And I've just have noticed to myself, Doug, over the last few decade or so, there doesn't seem to be any special emphasis put on love, like you say, unless it's talking about something ridiculous like coffee. or my dog, or it's used as a metaphor for sex. And on the same hand, I have to say that friendship as an undertaking is not really, I don't hear anybody talk about that. I know that we live in a very lonely time, but I don't really hear people talking about friendship. And I notice that people don't really invest in the same way that they don't invest in lifelong love. It doesn't seem like people invest in lifelong friendship much either.
I think you're right about that. And just for qualification, I want to go back to this idea of the four loves in C.S. Lewis's book there, affection, eros, charity, and friendship. The great philosophers have written on that, as you know, Aristotle,
yeah,
and others, because it's a vital area of life. You have your associates at work, may become friends, may not. You have your family, but then you have these elective relationships that are entered into for various reasons. But we tend to have a contractual view there too. I think it's implicit, not explicit, almost a consumer mentality that if someone gives me pleasure, if I benefit something somehow from someone, or if I don't have to give a whole lot, then we're friends. And once that ceases to happen, we're no longer friends. So there's not a deeper bond between people. But friendships, especially a couple, not even a married couple, can be extremely powerful. And you think of the situations where you have two people that are more creative or more profound together than separately. There was a book written on this some years ago. I can't recall the title. But think of songwriting.
Lennon McCartney.
That's right. And there are a lot of situations like that. One in jazz would be Billy Strayhorn and Duke Ellington. For about 2 years, they worked very closely together in the Ellington band, and Strayhorn was a composer and an arranger. So friendship can be very significant over the long haul, and sometimes friendships fade a little bit. I mean, I think that happened to us for a while. We just got out of touch for several years, and now we're interacting a whole lot more and being on the radio, and it's terrific. But we didn't have to start from scratch, and we didn't.
And sometimes if you have a profound friendship, like I remember when I went to Ireland, you were the person who answered every one of my letters.
Huh.
And
very
thoughtful.
It has to do with consistency.
Yeah, thoughtful and kind of deep stuff, and it was very meaningful. But I would say that if you have a real friendship with somebody, you can run into them. You know, if you lose touch, you can run into them 10 or 20 years later and pick up where you left off.
Right. And that's one of the joys of life, really. And we are so, quote unquote, connected. But how involved are we with people in the depths of their lives? And that's another question. Are you willing to put yourself out? Or as Jesus said, go the second mile with someone. Because love is other-oriented, and it has the best in mind for the other person. It's not something that where you use a person and they use you. If that's the case, then it's not love. I'm not even sure what to call it.
All right, so this is something Alul brings up in this book is love is life. And the way that he kind of plays it out kind of inverts everything. We tend to look at love in our culture as a matter of convenience. But if it is just convenience, then we're missing out, even from a humanistic, throw God out the window, or a religion, and say, even from a humanistic standard, you're not even experiencing what there are the highs and lows of human history. I mean, you're just kind of skimming across the surface.
Right, and I think back to Kierkegaard's little book, which I think you read, called The Present Age, where he claims that his age lacked spirit or passion. And I think we can dilate on that a little bit and say, well, what matters? What are we willing to expend ourselves for? And it has to be more than simply superficial gratifications, because those dry up after a while and then you're off to the next one. And it usually has to be more exhilarating, more bizarre, even it can become more perverse.
I have an application for this. It seems like there's a difference between in quality between a person who, for example, joins the military and actually risks their life in battle. And I was thinking this in terms of leadership. It's better to have a leader who has been in battle and risked their life, because it goes to show you that there is something that's more important than just pure ambition. A lot of these people in political life, their greatest achievement is getting elected and having the experience in office. And it seems like you need more than that to have a person qualified to lead a people.
You're right about that. I think what you need is a respect for and a love for your country. Your love for your country is not unconditional, because you can criticize your country, and your country may even become evil, as in Nazi Germany.
Sure.
But there's a higher standard. There's a sense of responsibility to truth and responsibility to what is best in your heritage. And I don't see that in a lot of politicians. I think the flaming example is Hillary Clinton. It's obvious that what she cares about and what her husband cares about is prestige, fame.
But what about
getting
Doug,
elected?
Doug, what about when she dodged bullets in Bosnia, getting off a plane?
Yeah. Well, truth is meaningless if the ego is in control.
Well, actually, that was a made-up anecdote that she came up with. But
right, exactly. Yeah. So truth becomes a servant of the ego, and the only love there is a pernicious kind of self-love, self-worship, really. And you can manipulate people if it's in your own interest. As you narrowly define interest, it's ultimately pretty hollow. Why be famous for being famous? The issue is, do you have these character traits, and are you truly working for the good of the United States? That's the older view of statesmanship. Now,
yeah.
You know, no president, let's say, has been completely altruistic, but you have a sense of deep love for one's country, and someone like Ronald Reagan, and I think that was a significant part of his greatness as a president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He had a vision that he was following, and one of the parts of his vision that we badly need to rehabilitate now is this idea of America as a holder of great aspirations and great commitments.
And with respect to America, when you think of all the natural resources we have, the kind of protection we have from enemies with the Pacific and the Atlantic Ocean, I think of what Jesus said, to whom much is given, much is required. So with all these opportunities, are we making the best of them, or are we just trying to muddle along and be superficially satisfied, as I think is the case in a lot of Western European nations, particularly France? What matters is that we get our five-week holiday. And I was thinking recently about President Kennedy, when he said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I don't really hear that kind of language anymore.
You don't?
I hear language about entitlements.
Well, and not only that, but there's this sense that America has to be punished, and that after we're punished, then we will take our proper place in line. Even if you accept all of the most extreme criticisms of the far left, if you applied all of their ideas, what would be the end result? I mean, even if America is flawed, don't we need one country that's willing to stick its neck out occasionally, that's willing to lead the rest of the world if nobody else is, that's willing to join World War I and World War II to fight tyranny? I mean, what is the world like in the last 150, 200 years without America? To me, it's a no-go area. But anyway, folks, we're talking to Doug Groteis, and take a little break here. It is 7:33. You're listening to the AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. I don't even think that the extra phone line is working right now, so don't worry about that. But 805-6180 is your text. We will be right back at 734 on the button.
Have you gotten any texts so far? Have you gotten any text messages yet?
I don't know. I looked a couple of times. No.
Okay, that's fine.
I think
bringing it back to love of country and patriotism is an interesting theme to work on.
No, I think so. I mean, I think people are lonely out there, you know? And I think that one of the things that they'd like to hear is that there is such a thing as love, and it's worth investing your life in, you know?
Right. Well, I think when people give eulogies, they want to say that the person who died was a loving person. The eulogy virtues, to use David Brooks' example for language. Do you know that book called The Road to Character? Have you seen that?
David Brooks from New York Times?
Right.
No, not one of my favorite authors.
Well, me either, but he's got some good things going in that particular book.
That guy's a total sellout.
Yeah, seems to be.
Where are you going to publish this article?
I'll probably put it on my blog. I'm getting a lot of interest in my blog recently. One of my posts got shared 2,000 times, I think, something like that.
Do you ever take your articles and send them to blogs or newspapers and saying, reprint it, feel free to reprint?
Well, I don't think I've done that. I'm not sure what the policy is. Sometimes they want to have first rights.
But if they don't?
Yeah. I used to write quite a bit for the Rocky Mountain News, and then I went out of business about 10 years ago. I haven't done as much writing for newspapers since then. Still looking over this Elul chapter here.
Get to the part where it says, but all this is just preamble.
Hmm. I don't have trouble finding it. It's in that book, What I Believe.
Yeah, it's in the chapter Lifelong Love.
Oh, there we go. Page 66. Yeah, I wrote next to it, very poignant.
I've never read anything more powerful in that chapter in my life. I don't think in terms of the things that are most meaningful.
Yeah. I like that formula. In a society which talks excessively about a human factor, the point is that that factor does not exist. People talk excessively about freedom when it is suppressed.
Yeah. We're back on.
Okay.
And 737 flying the friendly skies. And I've got Doug Rotice on the line. And Doug, let's put some flesh on this topic, love. You know, what does love mean? I don't hear anybody talking about it anymore. And if people do talk about it, it's used as a just kind of a cheap adjective. And I never hear in any of the popular media, popular art, do I hear people talk about I love you forever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get married and stay together forever. I don't hear that anymore. And it seems to me that if you're entering into a relationship with somebody and it's understood that it will last as long as it lasts, and then you'll move on to greener pastures, you're never going to be able to open up to that person and trust them the way that you would if you know that they're in for the entire, you know, for a lifetime.
That's true. And love is willing to make sacrifices for the marriage or for the friendship. And a creature's love for God should be the same way. Jesus said, if you want to be my disciple, deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me. And the subtext is, it's worth it. It's worth following great people. It's worth following, then, of course, the Son of God. But I think that a lot of Americans don't see that greatness can be achieved in small things. And greatness is not a matter of having a million people like your blog. It's a matter of character traits and how those things play out over a long period of time. We tend to be social climbers. We want better this and better that. It doesn't matter who we leave behind in doing it. So there's a breakdown of community, people who want to stay together or live in close proximity for the long haul to invest in each other's lives. The idea is, well, if there's a better job, I'll take it. So much for the relationships, or, you know, I'll Skype once in a while. And that's a real loss. And as you said, it produces loneliness, not the loneliness of a hermit, but as a writer said a long time ago, the lonely crowd, where we're together with people, perhaps just online, but how well do we know the other person? Do we really delight in the other person? Or is the other person just a mass of data?
Yes, an instrument for my pleasure. I mean, I'm using a lot of the terminology and the imagery that Alul. I read this chapter, Lifelong Love, when I was hanging around you, and it really kind of seared itself into my brain, and never been able to get it out of my mind. The other has to be in love. The other has to be more than just an instrument of my pleasure, or I don't love them. And then it talked about this guy who had a relationship with his wife, who was he called her a severe hemiplegic. I mean, like basically a person who was physically unable to care for themselves, and that the guy didn't put her in an institution. He didn't divorce her. He just stayed with her and cared for her, and that became the defining work of his life. And I'm like, you know, we don't, not only do you don't hear about stuff like that anymore, but it's certainly not celebrated or held up as a standard, because we no longer believe in lifelong love.
I think so. It's viewed as boring. Or why be committed to someone when they take more than it seems you have to give, or when they take so much and they give so little? Well, the issue is this idea of commitment over the long haul. I think one of the most heartening things a friend can say to another friend is, I'm not going anywhere. Meaning, I'm going to be your friend come what may. I have a good friend that way. And you can count on people like that in the most difficult times. And that brings the most profound joy to both lives. But it's not a purely instrumental happiness where you're always calculating, how happy am I? How happy is the other person? It goes a whole lot deeper than that. And I think of what Jesus said, the greatest love is to lay down your life for another person. And that's what he himself demonstrated by going to the cross. But the whole idea of a cross, I think, is alien to us. The whole idea of putting things aside or sacrificing things for a greater good that may not be immediately felt is rather alien to our instant gratification culture.
So this, when Christ says, unless a seed falls in the ground and dies, it cannot create new life, it cannot live, where you're going with this, and the notion that people specifically choose to sacrifice as part of a loving relationship, correct?
Yes, indeed. And I think especially in marriage, when the husband or the wife contracts some horrible disease or loses his or her mind through dementia, that really tests the nature of the relationship. And I was horrified several years ago when Pat Robertson said on the air, that if your spouse has severe dementia and they don't recognize you anymore, then you can divorce that person because he or she is no longer there. That how non-Christian and anti-Christian can you get? People are made in the image and likeness of God, whatever their state of mind or state of body may be. And moreover, a vow to another person in the sense of a covenant, which is the biblical view, is not conditional on the health of the other person or the wealth of the other person. So he's really flushing down the toilet this idea that we've been kicking around of lifelong love, and you find the significance in the covenant.
So what is a covenant? I know that the root word is bereth, which means to cut, and it brings forward this idea that has been since the oldest records that we have of mankind, is that there was always animal or human sacrifice, and often in the Jewish understanding, an animal was sacrificed and split apart to memorialize the covenant, the agreement.
Right. Well, it's a sacred transaction. It's not merely a cost-benefit analysis. And I think of the new covenant, which we see laid out in the New Testament and anticipated in the Old Testament, well, that covenant is made by the sacrifice of Christ himself. So a follower of Christ is not merely using Christ for benefit or shouldn't, but has this sense of sacred trust and sacred obligation in their relationship. And in other senses, we need covenants as well. Now, we need contracts. We need contract law. That's nothing we want to get rid of in our culture, but there's some relationships that should go deeper than that and which have a meaning that goes beyond economic or emotional payoff, so to speak.
Well, the foundational theory behind our government is based on a covenant. So it is this kind of has these spiritual elements in America. Without this, this could be a whole nother show, but America was well known for having a patriotism based on love of country and love of the good, a virtue and everything. But let me ask you this, just briefly, you and I have both done a lot of reading in pagan philosophers. There's people listening to the show that are agnostics or they're atheists. What would you offer them in terms of, you know, love, or is there a source that they could tap into?
Right. Well, one of my students, a guy named Jonah Haddad, who's now working in France, wrote a book called Leaving Dirt Place. It's a strange title. It has to do with a dream that he once had. But the thesis of that book is that only Christianity can give an account for and meaning for love. You certainly can't find it in atheism, or put it positively, materialism, because our consciousness is merely matter or the result of matter, and there is no overarching meaning to life. It's simply survival and what needs to be done to survive. You can't find a sense of altruism, other-oriented love, in that worldview, because when loving beings die out, it wouldn't even be love, there would be no sense of it whatsoever. So for this worldview, there's no love at the bottom of things, so to speak. And if you're talking about an Eastern philosophy, let's say non-dualistic Hinduism, you have this universal something that can't be described, Brahman, but that being is not a being who created the world or who calls the world into account. It's impersonal and really non-moral.
It's really an energy that is at the center
right.
of the universe, and you have to get past all of these gods to find the energy source and and get into it. Folks, we'll take a little break here, and it's 7:48 talking to Doug Groteis. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. Your number to text 805-6180, and we will be right back.
Maybe I should buy some old tab collars. Welcome back to the Age of Jive.
Here's your Las.
So we have like five minutes left.
Okay.
This is a tough topic.
Well, there's a lot to say about it. It's been interesting to explore it with you. Be interesting to see what kind of response you get from people. Do you get many emails or?
I don't get, well, I did set up an email account, but there was a person who sent me so many emails, I kind of stopped checking it.
Yeah, some people obsess on that.
Because it's a way to really get your opinion out, but, I mean, on the other hand, kind of defeats the purpose, you know?
Right. Do you have a way of reading emails when you're online?
Yeah, I can. I kind of got out of the habit of, I wanted little kind of pithy emails to read, but some of them went on for pages.
Right. I'm on this show every Thursday called Kelly and Company. That's what we should call your show. and they get emails, and they sometimes read them over the air if they're pithy enough.
Yeah.
But you can't read a long discourse.
Yeah, of course not. Well, I mean, I think this is a topic that you would never hear anybody talk about on talk radio, so.
You might hear Dennis Prager talk about it.
Yeah, he's a profound guy, he really is.
Most cases you wouldn't. You wouldn't hear Mark Levin talk about it, I don't think.
No, not at all.
He might talk about love of country, though. Love of liberty. You know, we could go back to that idea of the source of love, if you'd like to.
Well, you know, what I kind of realized that the most obvious thing we haven't done is read Corinthians 14, or 13, pardon me.
Yeah, 13. I was looking around for a Bible, and it's ridiculous. I can't find
one. I've got the passage right in front of me. I'll go ahead and read it.
Yeah. Yeah, especially 4 through 8, verses 4 through 8.
Yeah, it's kind of
wild. What's key to that is the idea that love rejoices in the truth. So you can't be loving unless you're rejoicing in the truth. You can't love if the love, as you understand it, is actually a lie. I think that's a really profound part of the verse, or the text there.
Yeah. And it kind of comes to mind with this whole debate over gay marriage, which I think people have gotten caught up in, really, they're angry at gays for pushing this, but it's really the larger culture that there's this telos that is unleashed in the sexual revolution, and the telos leads us in this direction, you know?
That's right. Yeah. Throw off the restraints of traditional sexuality, let it all hang out. Well, we're seeing it all hang out now, that's for sure.
Scary, though, to think of what, if this goes on, what the family and the human person is going to look like in 100 years.
I don't know.
You know what's interesting is the topic of revival.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what chances are.
Yeah, I guess in a sense they're always the same because God is sovereign. Too many people are discussing it or thinking too seriously about it.
Well, why were there so many revivals in the beginning of the country here, and now it doesn't seem like we've had one for a long time?
Yeah, or we just use it for other topics, you know, the revival of a band or something. Or the revival of a style, not a revival of the person before God. That'd be a good topic. Maybe we can use that next week.
That sounds good. Kind of a depressing topic, love. And you
shouldn't be.
So much since we were kids, you know?
Oh, certainly.
Wow. I mean, there used to be a real sense of love, or at least the possibility of it.
Mm-hmm. Love needs structure. We don't have a lot of
time. We're on the air. Thanks for tuning in. Kelly here, and I've got Doug Groteis on the line, and he wanted to talk about love, which is kind of an impossible topic, but The passage that people always quote on this, Doug, even if they're not Christian or if they're not religious, is 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away, etc. So what's your reaction to that?
People say that we don't know what love is or we can't describe love. That's not true. You just read what love is. And one thing I want to focus on about those verses, again, that's 1 Corinthians 13, is love rejoices in the truth. Love needs to be grounded in reality. Simply having a strong feeling towards someone or affection or erotic attraction doesn't mean you have bona fide, genuine love. Love rejoices in the truth. So it has to be more than subjective. There has to be some kind of objective reference and objective grounding for love. Love rejoices in the truth. So when people appeal to the Bible to try to justify, let's say, same-sex marriage, I say, well, what does the Bible teach about marriage? And there's nothing directly about same-sex marriage. And certainly, marriage is between a man and a woman. So you can't even infer it from anything in the Bible.
Jesus says, when he talks about it, we know that Jesus supported marriage because his first miracle was at a wedding. He went to a wedding and supported that. He says, when they were asking him about divorce, he says, in the beginning, the man and the woman were married. He couches his understanding of sex and marriage between a man and a woman. He grounds his response to divorce in that.
Right. And that's Matthew 19, 1 through 6. So when people say Jesus said nothing about homosexuality, I'd say he certainly did by implication, because he said that marriage is between a man and a woman. That's how God set it up. That's the only authorized sexual union in terms of the nature of creation. And moreover, among the Jews, it was not a huge issue whether homosexual activity was wrong. Everyone assumed that it was, given their history and their scriptures.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. Let's kind of sum this thing up. My perspective, love is certainly not celebrated. Real love is not celebrated in our culture and doesn't really seem to exist out there. And because of that, there's a lot of lonely, unfulfilled people out there. What's your take?
I think you're right about the loneliness. We can associate with people and have some kind of common enjoyment or data connection through the internet without having love in its richest sense, which involves a proper goal and the concept of sacrifice for that higher goal, that common goal. We often don't see that. We see love as a kind of exchange of goods and services. And when someone doesn't provide what you want, you can simply drop them or fade out of the relationship. And that's not a lifelong love. It's not a love based on commitment to the well-being of another person. It's not commitment for commitment's sake. That's something you might remember that Harold Bloom talked about in The Closing the American Mind 30 years ago. Everybody talks about commitment, but no reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason for it is that human beings are made in God's image and likeness, and love is ultimately based on the character of God himself. God is love, but that doesn't mean that God endorses everything. Love should have a framework.
90 seconds.
Should have an outline. Well, folks, we're at the end of our hour with Doug. Thanks, Doug. I really enjoyed